when we think of unhealthy conflict, we have conflict that is visible, you know, someone sending off that really fiery email or worse, raising their voice, demeaning somebody in front of others in a meeting, right? And it's also dysfunctional.
This is Leaderful, where we give you the models and the frameworks, the strategies and the skills that you need to drive true transformation for yourself, your team, your organization, and the world. Welcome to the show. So why don't you kick us off with how we look at conflict and its role on teams?
Yeah, we believe that if organizations and teams can embrace conflict and lead and navigate through it in a compassionate, conscious way, that, you know, we see things like collaboration increase, innovation, you know, better ideas are generated. You know, we talk about meaningful connection, really strong, high functioning teams. And so for us, if that indicator is strong, we equate that to this team probably has higher levels of collaboration. They're innovating and they're performing at a really great level. One thing that was what we thought was missing was a map or a way for people to make sense of the types of conflict that existed within their organization. And so, you know, we came up with why don't we do this again? I'll do two, you do two. We came up with this conflict map, which right now we have in a quadrant form. But essentially there were four types of conflict. And based on understanding which types of conflict you had, you could actually, you know, follow through with the right strategies or decisions. And so let's start with, which one do you want to start with? Why don't we start with unhealthy conflict, which is probably, you know, the one that I would say people think of the most when they think of conflict. And just, sorry, one thing I totally forgot to mention about the map is that the axes or axis is the visibility of that conflict. So visible, non-visible, and the function or functionality of that conflict. So is it functional or is it dysfunctional? And so when we think of unhealthy conflict, we have conflict that is visible, you know, someone sending off that really fiery email or worse, raising their voice, demeaning somebody in front of others in a meeting, right? And it's also dysfunctional. It's highly likely that behavior, that conflict is not going to lead to anything productive. In fact, it could actually lead to something legal. So why don't we do switch back and forth? So I'll start with one. That is the unhealthy conflict. Surprisingly enough, you know, we still see a lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it sales, let's maybe move down the visibility spectrum. So we're still on the dysfunctional side of the spectrum, and it's dysfunctional because it's stuck often. It's not leading to innovation. It's not leading us to have the conversations we need to have. It's resulting in stuckness or polarization on a team, the us versus them, the A team versus the B team. There's lots of ways that that shows up in organizations. When we shift down, but everybody knows it's happening, right? The whole team is like aware of the conflict and could probably point it out and name it. As we go down the visibility spectrum, doesn't mean the conflict is totally invisible, but it's just not visible to everyone, or it's interpreted very differently, right? And so you'll have, you know, an example of this might be someone who shows up to a meeting, disagrees, doesn't have challenger safety, so they're not going to say anything, and they go home and they vent to their spouse, or they go for beers with a colleague after the fact, and they talk about how annoying this behavior is, or how misaligned the team is, or how this leader does X, Y, or Z, and we call that artificial harmony, because probably on the surface, if you sat in on the room, it wouldn't be obvious. Right? You'd have to be in the meeting after the meeting to realize that there was a tension or a conflict there. And that's actually a great signal that there's artificial harmony in an organization, our pre-meetings and post-meetings. Do I need to meet with Pablo before this meeting we have so we can get aligned so that we can fight together or push back on something? And are we meeting after the fact to debrief? That should happen in the same meeting with the team, right? So artificial harmony is conflict that is still dysfunctional because it's still stuck. We're not making progress. And it's not as visible. And people are going to have very different perspectives about the health of the team. And this one is actually pretty tricky for leaders sometimes to tease out, because on the surface, in the meeting, everything looks fine. People are smiling, even nodding their heads. They're acquiescing. They're just agreeing to whatever's happening. And then it's after the fact and behind the scenes that the conflict is leaking out into the organization. So we have unhealthy conflict. We have artificial harmony. Why don't you talk about like kind of the accidental or unintentional performance?
Yeah, and I just to add to artificial harmony, it's something that impacted me actually directly when I was, responsible for people and culture with a couple organizations was, I've personally seen this happen in those cultures that are actually known for being forward thinking, flat, modern. People, as you start to grow the team and new individuals come in, there's this sense of like, wow, I'm so lucky to be here. I don't want to rock the boat, right? I have it good here. And so surprisingly enough, a lot of these organizations feel like, you know, we've got a really strong culture, but you'd be surprised at the level of artificial harmony because people are, you know, in some ways worried that, you know, this is the best it gets, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just, I need to share that because sometimes, oh, that's not happened here. Mm-hmm. But one thing I feel pretty confident to say, here's my joltiness, that it is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw it a couple of weeks ago. I was doing a workshop with a client, and on the surface, you wouldn't see conflict. And half the team of 25, over half of them said, no, artificial harmony is a problem here. We have tension and conflict that we are not resolving. We are not moving forward. So absolutely. But let's talk about unintentional or accidental. Like, what happens when we're on the functional side, but maybe still invisible or less visible with our conflict?
Yeah, and again, you use some of this language, you know, A players, A team. You know, we've seen this where there's silos within the business, academic industry, for example, where there's, you know, hoarding of information. And it's just the organization will have some very strong teams. This is what it typically looks like, or individuals, yet they don't really understand the formula or the recipe or what's happening there. And in fact, a lot of the time that can actually lead to some of the other types of conflict. And we've seen that, right? We've seen, you know, for example, I'll use the artificial harmony one. Oh, that team gets preference, but nothing said about it, right? Or, you know, full out blowouts, you know, fighting over budgets. And so, yeah, for me, we call it unintentional, also accidental. There's a huge opportunity there to understand, is this healthy, sustainable? Right. Or. And so the decision is, you know, to practice some curiosity, find out if there's anything that we could replicate, learn, and distribute throughout the organization.
Yeah. Actually, I'm reflecting as you're talking about a coaching engagement that I had a while back with a leader who the initial call was because of some very unhealthy conflict. Like when you talk about that, like outburst, that demeaning, that loud, like aggressive tone. So that had happened. There had been an instance, had been caught on video camera in the shop. And so there was a very clear, like, something needs to happen here. Let's call Jeff to see what we can do. They didn't want to fire him, but it was one of those, like, could have fired him or could have done some, like, can we save your career kind of work. When I started to dig in with him, he's actually cared more about that organization and the experience that the customers and the people were having than anybody else I had talked to, including his boss. Right. So his level of care and concern was so deep. He had been operating as one of those accidental performers for a very long time. And the frustration was with artificial harmony because he had been pointing things out and nobody had been acknowledging it. And it was not one of those outbursts that just happened out of nowhere. It was 6 months of frustration accumulating to a point where that conflict just erupted in that unhealthy space. And the opportunity there was to shift into the fourth quadrant, which is the productive tension or the healthy conflict, which is, let's make this visible, but let's use it as an experience that we can go through together to build out the structures, the systems, the processes, the mindset around conflict as being healthy and necessary for us to continue to improve. Because that was actually the point of frustration was for him was with the status quo and seeing all the opportunities that we can make this better for everyone involved. And so when we get to that fourth quadrant, that place where conflict is visible, so we all have a shared understanding and language for it, and it's functional, what does that look like? Like, how do we get there? Maybe what are some of the pathways to get there? And maybe some examples of where you've seen that work well.
Yeah, I mean, so where I've seen it work well, I got one of my strongest lessons was early on in our partnership with me, you, and Kimberly, just having very different styles, approaches, frameworks, personalities, different types of power, right, at different levels. And so for us, I think we've enjoyed the benefits of that. And it took us a while to get there. And I think what helped us get there was a combination of some of these other things here is just really discussing the power dynamics that were in place for ourselves and for, you know, as individuals and as a team. Also, some awareness, I think, and the will to do the work, because like I remember you and I, we're so busy, we need to work faster. And Kimberly was so great at pulling us back to say, you know, no, we need to actually get into this tension, right? And so that will to do it was, I would say probably, here's the good news. The results come really fast. So if you don't have the will to begin it, just trust the process and you will see the results come. But then I think it was skill, right? Developing skill together. Like you said, shared language, shared approaches. I think we had weekly partner meetings. So there was operational rhythms and cadences in place for tension and for conflict to show up in a safe way. If, you know, we worked on conscious communication, which I know we'll get to later, but just how to meaningfully give and receive feedback, which usually comes in the areas of tension and conflict. And just, I'll put a plug here, Jeff, maybe what we could share with people is, you know, there's some really simple tools to follow, like the assumption clearing tool, right? Asking powerful questions to really help you dig into understanding maybe the needs, the values, the goals at an individual and collective level that might be under there, which might be creating that tension. Because once you can get to those, you know, you can co-design or co-create your way forward. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's my rambling. I love this one.
Yeah, no, I think this is a critical one, because on the other side of conflict is innovation and meaningful connection and a deeper level of all of these things that we've been talking about. And I think the realization, you know, for a leader, when they realize that conflict is there, like the basic assumption should be that there is conflict on my team. There is unresolved tension. And to wait for it to bubble up to the surface, like it did with that fellow that I ended up doing some coaching with, is like, that's a misuse of power. At some level, we should be able to assume that because of the power dynamic, because of the complexities of work and the complexities of being human, that there's going to be gaps, there's going to be tensions. We should expect them. And like you say, we should put them into the operational rhythm. So we should have issues meetings. We should have assumption clearing tools. We should have those things baked in to how we do teaming. And that's relational versus task. And I think that's a shift for a lot of leaders, as we get pretty task focused. I know I can do that for sure. And the relational component of how we're going to be together is equally important, if not more important, which maybe is a nice segue into conscious communication, because we look at communication as a set of tools and practices to live on that spectrum of being in relationship with each other and connecting with each other, the human being side of life. And there's the human doing or the task focus, like how do we get things done together, and different communication tools for different purposes, you know, for the sake of what we often ask ourselves. So let's slide over to conscious communication and talk through that.
Yeah. I mean, it's safe to say that shows up in all of our work. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen, you know, a lot of organizations, a lot of teams are stuck because they're just not, it's like two gears missing each other, the way they don't have shared understanding. They don't have, you know, maybe the skill set or the same tools, like you mentioned, to use to navigate through that. And so I think, you know, when we talk about conscious communication, I know we've used other words like compassionate and effective. What we're trying to really get at is, and I love this framework that you introduced, the 3 Ds of conscious communication, because I think it really helps simplify communication into these, you know, 3 areas that you can go even further into. And so the first one, the one that I think we think we're better at is, and the one that we probably should spend the most time on, is deep listening. So again, this is where awareness of power, of your, you know, leadership impact, psychological safety, you know, just being, and then having skill to ask the right questions, powerful questions, but just really trying to identify needs, values, and goals of an individual or a group. So deep listening, you know, we talk about, you know, the first level of listening where someone's talking to you and you're every word or story they're saying, you're looking for connections. You're trying to build rapport. So your intention is great. But you're not really listening. You're looking for connection yourself. And so that's the first level. The second level is, you know, now you're hearing some things and you might repeat them back to confirm your understanding of something. So you're going a little bit deeper to, you know, create that shared understanding. And then the third one, which, you know, I know Kimberly explains as global listening, but that deep level of listening is where you're doing, maybe you're still repeating back what you're hearing, but now you're saying, I noticed you lit up when you talked about this thing. I noticed you energized, you leaned into the conversation, or maybe you leaned away. And so this is that practicing that compassionate curiosity to really understand emotions and feelings, you know, those core fundamentals that make us human. Because those are the things with which we can motivate, with which we can create together and collaborate. So anyways, that deep listening I'm passionate about. I'll pass it over to you for, where do you want to go next? Dialogue? Do you want to go to the other side?
No, let's go to dialogue, because I think, you know, the last one, directives, we spend, you know, it's easy. It's actually easier to get to directives when we shift from deep listening. And deep listening for me is really about creating the space, a safe space for a person to share what's most meaningful. Because if we can understand what's most meaningful, you know, we talk about needs, values, and goals. If we can understand that, right, then we can make sense of behavior. We can make sense of engagement. We can make sense of some of those other things that we might be focused on or might have drawn us in the first place to having a conversation. Dialogue is when both of us are there together. So what I like to look at, like deep listening, I'm there, but what's most important is what's meaningful to the other person. In dialogue, I want to be able to share what's meaningful to me. And have an exchange and create potentially a third understanding or a shared understanding of what's meaningful to both of us, or what's meaningful to us and the team or the organization or what we're trying to do together. And so dialogue, we've got tools for that, but it really is that I think it's a missing ingredient in society today. I think we see a lot of that polarization. We see a lot of competition with communication to like overpower or to like get our way. And if that's the goal, if the goal is to get your own way, then you're not in dialogue. You're not in true dialogue, right? You're just talking for the sake of trying to find an opening to insert your opinion. And we see a lot of that on teams and just in relationships in general. I see it with my kids sometimes. I'm trying to engage in dialogue, but really what I want is for them to go to bed, right? Or them to do their homework. And that's the mission, right? Which leads us over to directives, which is that, you know, clear, connected, concise directives, not demands, right? The difference between a directive and a demand is that a demand comes with negative punitive consequences, right? A directive is often framed as a, you know, would you be willing to do X, right? Because this is why it's important, because we've had the dialogue already, or I've listened to you deeply. We've engaged in some dialogue, and the next action step, the directive makes sense, right? It's fairly easy when you do it that way. Oftentimes though, leaders, especially certain types of leaders, myself included, this is an area of growth for me, really easy to believe we know what needs to be done next and just to give directives, and to the slippery slope is into demands, which also, you know, so interconnected to the experience of psychological safety, right? If you feel like a demand has come your way and there's going to be a negative consequence for you to say no or to say yes, or like whatever that looks like, it has a direct impact on our psychological safety. Right? And if that gets affected, well, it's hard to be meaningfully connected. And if we're not meaningfully connected, it impacts our wellness. And so we can start to see how communication, if I look at the core set of leadership skills of how we actually operationalize power and have an impact as leaders, it's through communication. And so that tends to be often a starting point for us with teams to get into some of these other core key indicators and core skills. Anything else on conscious communication before we...
Yeah, I mean, there's a tools component, if you will, processes, systems, supports in place for any of these indicators and drivers. But I think, you know, we see, and we survey for it as well, just to understand how people are communicating. Mm-hmm. Because it, you know, sometimes what we feel, it's kind of like they're trying to, if you haven't designed the way you're going to communicate as a team, then you're just shoehorning, you know, things into the tool that you have, which aren't really solving anything. And so, so my advice would be, you know, leave your tools for a second. We still want to understand how people's experiences are with those tools that exist, but first kind of design the way that you're consciously going to communicate as a team, as an individual, and as an organization, and then bring in the tools or design the tools to work to support that.
Mm-hmm. That's a great piece of advice.
That'd be my advice.
Yeah. It's so good, because it's so common and I do it myself. I think I have a need, so I go looking for the tool and I try and shoehorn something into a stack or a system that hasn't been intentionally or consciously designed for it. I think we could probably do a podcast episode on each of these indicators, because there is a lot of depth to them. And so this is kind of meant to be a high surface level, but I can't leave conscious communication without taking a bit of a shot at some of the mainstream advice around communication, especially when it comes to feedback. You know, we hear things like radicalness, radical candor, brutal honesty, you know, direct feedback, like some of these things. And I'll, you know, just briefly, those are like, if there was no power dynamic, that perspective, I think, would be fine. Radical candor, brutal honesty, those things, when there isn't a power dynamic, sure, that might make sense. But I don't have any relationships in my life that don't have a power dynamic. And depending on which side of the power dynamic you are on, that perspective that I can just be like radical with my feedback or brutally honest, and then it's up to the other person to interpret it a certain way and to take it as just truth. You know, there's a lot of things that break in that model, and we see a lot of damage being done in relationship. And so I just want to kind of caution people. There are good, like, those models have nuggets of wisdom in them for sure. But oftentimes they turn into this, like, well, I'm a leader, so I can just say whatever I want to people. And it's just my truth, or it's just my directness and my honesty. And yeah, there's more to it than that. And maybe we'll save that for another podcast, and I can go on a bit of a rant on that one.
No, I agree with you. And it's, someone shared the analogy with me the other day, and you know, it's just like, you know, something like radical candor. You know, like you said, there's great nuggets, and some teams, mind you, not so many. There's, you can find the two or three books have really mastered that, and it works well for them, supposedly in the book, anyways. Yeah. But you know, a hammer can help you build things. It's a tool. Mm-hmm. It can also break things, and so that's, I think, a lot of this, I think, goes for any tools or frameworks out there. Is that, yes, they inherently aren't bad or good, but how they're used, if we don't understand things like power, psychological safety, you know, your culture can actually backfire and do more damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in that power dynamic, so like one way I look at something like radical candor, like, it's just, we'll use that as an example. So I invite that from the people who are in the down power position to me. I want them to be radically transparent. And if their feedback is punchy and it's not framed well and it's full of emotion, it's like, that's all good. Like, just give it to me straight. Right. If I do that, the impact is very, very different. Right. My kids are allowed to have tantrums and give me their feedback that way. If dad has a tantrum, it's an entirely different experience for everybody in the house. Right. And that's, that analogy holds for me, because the power dynamic is not that different between, say, parenting or our other relationships and our work relationships, where there's that up and down power dynamic, which, again, we'll get into in a deeper podcast. Leaderful is brought to you by The Ally Co., a team of human-centered, systems-conscious consultants, coaches, and facilitators dedicated to helping you and your team tackle the core problems of burnout and stuckness and misalignment and misuses of power and all of the things that get in the way of creating truly human-centered workplaces where everyone thrives and does their best work. Head over to www.theallyco.world to learn more.